You are listening to a podcast of the Geek.io Media Network. For all of our shows and more, visit geek-io.net. And to help support the network, head over to patreon.com/geek.io.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Life of an Accounting Droid. I'm your host, as always, Neil, bringing you episode number 49. Got a pretty exciting episode for this week. A lot of different things going on, product announcement, new devices, and things like that, and then I'll round out the segment with a feature review, and then we'll jump on into the entertainment and relaxing segment. Otherwise, I didn't really have much to watch, or I didn't go out and watch anything particularly new. A couple of things on HBO, and that's really about it. I've been catching up on Boardwalk Empire Season 4, but that's mostly about it. So with that being said, I'll jump right into the episode. So for this week's theme, it is parent company. So in the business world, this is a company that controls another company by owning an influential amount of power over another company. Generally, you'll have larger companies that are able to have this kind of control, and it's usually over one or more subsidiaries to be considered a parent company. And generally, is considered a company is considered a parent company when they have a 50% or more controlling interest in that company, so they can effectively own most of the company. Anything less may or may not be considered a parent company, depending on the other parties or other companies that are invested in that subsidiary. And then finally, the amount of power also depends on that relationship between the parent company and its subsidiary. So sometimes it may be a controlling interest, but it's still a independent company, so it's basically just a overarching backing company. But beyond that, they don't really control it too much. They just say, hey, we're your parent, but do what you need to do and operate on its own. So that is all for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's news. So to start it off, Microsoft announced that its HoloLens has been open to developers to write software and build hardware that is supported for Windows 10, so they can develop or better develop software and hardware that integrates with HoloLens. This week, T-Mobile announced Uncarrier 11. They announced a few different things, but the thing of note is that they released an Android and iOS app to get these new features, and that includes a feature called Stock Up, where you get a share of T-Mobile stock for every referral you make, and it's up to 100 shares in a year. There is a fine print where that person has to stay with the T-Mobile for a certain amount of time. If you've been with T-Mobile for at least 5 years, you'll get 2 shares you'll start off with 2 shares rather than the one. They also announced T-Mobile freebies. These are weekly deals that you get just by being a T-Mobile customer and using the Android and iOS app. So for example, in this first week, there was a free pizza offer and tickets to the Warcraft movie. And I think it's every Tuesday new offers will come about, so that's why it's beneficial to have that app. And then they're also offering 1 hour of free GoGo Wi-Fi and messaging on flights that have GoGo internet. So the messaging apps that are supported are iMessage, Google Hangouts, and Viber. I'm not sure about the fine print as far as general internet usage. I'm not sure if it's just in your browser or apps are included as well. But basically, if you use iMessage, Google Hangouts, or Viber to chat, then you can use that for that hour and then also use some sort of internet. This week, Twitter for Android got an update with material design, so you'll have more material design elements, including the fab button at the bottom right and a swipe menu for certain extra items and things like that. So definitely worth getting an upgrade. I haven't really checked too much for the performance. It does seem a bit faster and snappier, and the UI seems a lot cleaner, so definitely a welcome visual update. Google announced or released a new app this week for iOS called Motion Stills. This allows you to create GIFs or GIFs from live photo images that users have created on their iPhone 6S, 6S Plus, or the 6E, or sorry, the SE. So, an app to help you better create GIFs. This week, Project Fi got an update to add U.S. cellular support. So, devices that support the bands that are supported or carried by U.S. cellular will now work in the, better in those areas. Google announced that Nearby is now rolling out. It's support on Android 4.4 and above, and it will make recommendations for apps and information and websites based on your location. So you can do things like print pictures if you're at a CVS, explore landmarks and get more information about those landmarks when you're in those areas, get app recommendations and more. It will be an opt-in feature, and it also does require having Bluetooth and location services enabled. So I haven't seen it just yet on my device, but as soon as I do, I'm sure I'm going to try it out and turn that on and all of that good stuff. Lenovo made a few announcements this week as far as the device news goes. The lesser-known device release was the Fab 2 Pro. It's a 6.4-inch device display with a Qualcomm Snapdragon 652 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, a fingerprint scanner, 4,000 mAh battery, and a 16-megapixel wide-angle rear camera. So, of note is the larger screen size and the camera. So, in case you want a phablet-sized device, then definitely worth checking out. The two device features of note for this week were the Moto Z and the Moto Z Force. They're mostly identical devices running Android 6.0.1, a Snapdragon 820 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 5.5-inch screen, 32 or 64 gigabytes of storage, which can be expanded up to 2 terabytes. On the Moto Z, it'll have a 5-megapixel rear camera and a 13-megapixel rear camera and a 5-megapixel front camera. The Moto Z Force will have a 21-megapixel rear camera and a 5-megapixel front camera. Both devices will come with USB-C charging. The Moto Z has a 2600 mAh battery with quick charge. The Moto Z Force will have a 3500 mAh battery with quick charge. So depending on depending on how big of a battery and what kind of camera you want, both devices are actually pretty good. I think they're releasing in the US first only. There was some weird exclusive that I briefly saw, but both devices are pretty good. They're up there on the specs. Storage space, camera, everything is actually worth it. If it were me buying it, depending on the price, I would probably go with the Moto Z Force because of the better camera and the bigger camera. With that, to round it out, VLC version 3.0's nightly builds started adding Chromecast support, so if you do use VLC, then that will be a welcome addition. So with that, I'll jump into this week's feature review, and that is selective filters in Snapseed. So I was playing around with a screenshot I took earlier from Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 7, The Broken Man. It was an image of River Run, and I thought about making it better, but I didn't want one unifying filter to be applied to the whole picture, and I couldn't decide between HDR and drama, so I got to playing around and found out that I could apply filters selectively based on the area of the image, and I thought I would share that. So what you'll do is you'll open the image to edit in Snapseed. You'll apply the first filter that you want to apply. So in this case, the first thing I did was apply the HDR filter. I applied it to the whole thing, left it at 50. And then I applied the drama filter. I did take a couple of steps, different filter steps in the video review, but so if you want to see how I did that, the link will be in the show notes. But in this case, for simplicity, let's say you just want to apply the HDR filter to one particular part of the image, like let's say something you want to stand out, or if you want to apply a dramatic filter to certain visual elements, or let's say you want to highlight people in the picture and make the rest of it black and white. What you'll do first is apply any filter, and then you'll touch the number at the top right of your screen. Depending on the number of edits you've already made, it'll be things like 1, 2, 3, things like that. So you'll touch that number. You'll touch the number of filter that you want to edit. So let's say you applied the HDR filter, you'll touch that, and then you'll see a little menu pop up to the left, and you'll touch the middle button, which has a square with a brush in it, and then you'll highlight the areas of the image where you want to apply the filter to. So let's say you're editing an image with people, and you want to highlight the people in it, make them HDR, leave everything else standard, Or let's say you've taken a picture and you've applied the HDR filter and you notice that the sky gets all fuzzy or super saturated or whatever, then you can apply the HDR filter, the rest of the image, leave the sky alone, just by swiping your finger over the parts of the image that you want to apply the filter to. Once you're done, you'll hit the check mark at the top right and hit the back arrow and return to the main screen, and you'll see that the filter is only applied to the parts of the image that you selected. So from here, you can continue editing the image. So if you want to deepen the shadows or apply black and white or the grainy filter or vignette or something like that, just apply different filters and you can do all that. Once you've done that, you can repeat the process, select a filter process over and over. So if you want to leave certain elements alone and apply multiple filters to the same area, then you can do that. Once you're done, you'll hit save the image and it'll be saved to your gallery, and you'll be all done, and you can keep the image, share it, and do whatever you want to do with that image. So as I mentioned earlier, I'll have a link to the video screencast that I did showing off applying multiple filters so you guys can get a better idea of what I covered here. But it's a relatively straightforward process and makes it it's a relatively easy process to apply filters to certain parts of the image, so you're only editing what you want to edit. So that is all for this particular segment. So after the short break, I'll jump into this week's entertainment segment. Life of an Accounting Droid is brought to you by you in a couple of great and exciting ways. So if you want to help expand the show and the network, we do have a couple of Patreons set up to help you support the show and the network in whatever way you can. So let's say you love Life of an Accounting Droid and you want to see more posts on the feed. You want to have an Android app to quickly and easily get to the post and via different categories and things like that. Let's say you want to have a Q&A segment. Then be sure to visit patreon.com/patelin01 to check out the various patron levels and what kind of things you can unlock by helping to support the show. You can also help support the network by visiting patreon.com/geekio. This helps our flagship show go ad-free. So let's say you just want to blaze through the show, listen to all of it uninterrupted. You can do things like that. Let's say you wanted a weekly D&D episode. Helping to contribute to the Geek.io Patreon can help do that as well as adding special patron content, adding a new show, getting more con coverage, all of the great geeky, nerdy stuff that we all love. So that's patreon.com/geekio for all of that good stuff, as well as patreon.com/patelin01 to help the show expand as well. But that is all for that, so back to the show. And welcome back to the episode, everybody. Not too much going on for this week's entertainment segment, just a couple of things of what I watched. A couple of TV episodes, a movie, and I actually decided to review Independence Day. I watched it again last week, and I didn't get a chance to watch any other movies over the weekend, so I just went with Independence Day, and that is about it. So with that, I'll jump right into it. So I had a chance to watch Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 7, The Broken Man. So pretty good episode here. A lot of progress. I like the scenes with Jaime Lannister and the Blackfish at River's Run. I like the views and all that and this scenery they had going on. The siege kind of felt weak, so it was a good portrayal there, so I knew right off the bat that like, or when they started going at it, that's kind of where they were going once they introduced the siege. So interesting, or I like that whole bit there. And then I liked that Yara Greyjoy is trying to bring Theon back for what she's trying to do, so we learned that she's actually going to try and team up with Daenerys first, so we'll see how that goes. So all in all, a pretty good episode. No Bran this time, so no progress or changes on that front, so we'll no update as far as where they're going at the moment. I also had a chance to watch Preacher Season 1, Episode 2C. Pretty straightforward episode. It was kind of slow for my taste, so I don't know if maybe it's just not a show for me. So I'll probably keep watching it just to see how it goes, but progress was a little bit better. We see that he's starting to get used to his voice of, or his new power in quotes, with the voice of God. So I'm kind of intrigued to see where they go with it and then make my judgment then. And then, otherwise, I had a chance to watch The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's a movie with the guy who plays the new Superman in Man of Steel. I forget his name offhand, but it's a pretty standard spy movie. There wasn't anything particularly good or bad I saw in it, so I don't know. It was basically, rather than having your traditional James Bond movie, it was your American movie. They went with the standard trope of the American spy teaming up and at odds with the Russian guy, so maybe that's kind of why I didn't like it as much, but I mean, decent enough. It was getting pretty good ratings on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. I think it was like around 65-75%, so people generally liked it. It wasn't spectacular, but I watched it on HBO Now, so if you have HBO, then you can check it out there at the moment. So that's really all there is for that. So with that, I'll jump into this week's film review. So as I mentioned, I had a chance to recently rewatch Independence Day to kind of review the movie before I watch Independence Day Resurgence. So the first movie released in the United States on July 3rd, 1996, has a runtime of 145 minutes. The summary of the movie is that the aliens are coming and their goal is to invade and destroy Earth. Fighting superior technology, mankind's best weapon is the will to survive. So, pretty generic but good sweeping overview of where the movie, or what's going on with the movie. So, not too much to say otherwise as far as that goes. So I'll jump right into it. It has an IMDb rating of 69%. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 61% critics rating and 75% audience rating. So people generally liked it, but it wasn't anything great. And for the most part, it did start off kind of slow, and built in the action until we get to the final main scene. I did like all the aerial scenes. It was pretty good. I liked the movie for the most part, but the one thing that stood out to me now, rewatching it after all these years, is a lot of the alien and spaceship logic. So that's kind of where I'm going to go with this particular review. So to start it off, if the aliens need a spacesuit in their own spaceships, why don't we need them too? So when we have Jeff Goldblum's whole plan about going into the mothership to plant the virus, him and Will Smith get into the spaceship, they start it up and they start flying into the outer atmosphere and go into space. And I got to thinking, like, if the alien, because they made a specific note that the aliens are wearing an exoskeleton because they need it to survive in space. So why, I mean, obviously the alien spaceship's not, there's a pretty good chance that the alien's exoskeleton suit thing's not going to work on humans. But if there's an atmosphere already in the mini ship, then why would the aliens wear an exoskeleton? Or why wouldn't the humans need to wear something as far as oxygen to get into the mothership? Speaking of that, though, on that note, how are the aliens automatically able to breathe in the alien spaceship? So this was a pretty big assumption that the aliens breathe air that is comparable to humans. I don't think I heard anything about how their atmosphere is, but going back to the whole exoskeleton suit, if the aliens they're assuming that we're going to assume that the aliens are breathing air and the exoskeleton is just to protect the alien body in space, so then this point is kind of moot. But if you're going to the whole process of explaining an exoskeleton, then why not explain the atmosphere, say that, yeah, they already have a portable air generator and it is suitable for humans. Next up, though, if the alien spaceship doesn't have to get updates, either it has Microsoft Windows level security issues or automatic updates were turned off or optional. So my biggest thing is that they bring it up that the spaceship is 40 years old, they've had the technology, they've been studying it, but it's been out of contact for all those years with the mothership. So if all the gizmos and lights and gadgets have recently turned on, maybe that was their explanation or a way of getting at that. Maybe it's doing a systems check and systems diagnostic, but My first thing as the alien is that if they have or they're able to control the ship or take control of it when it comes into range, wouldn't they want, or since they disable it, wouldn't they want to block all direct communications, maybe isolate it from all the other controls and figure out what happened or where it's been for all these years? So that brings me to my next point, is that when the ship that Jeff Goldblum and Will Smith are flying gets to the mothership and it's clamped in, was that alien flight controller checking the ship for tampering, life forms, or just a general systems check? So here would have actually been a nice place to explain what was going on, maybe have a heads-up display from Jeff Goldblum, or find out exactly what that alien was doing, or maybe we were meant to never know what was going on. But it seemed like just having the clamp and then no obvious reaction to the doors closing, and then having the other security ships show up. So I don't know, that whole scene seemed just void of enough information, so I kind of wanted to see a little bit more there as well. So finally, if we can bypass a system tampering check, why can't we turn off the shields or explain that they're an independent system? So this is my thing. So going back to the beginning, when we have the spaceship to begin with, so if we can mess around with the systems, find out what's going on, and if Jeff Goldblum in about 15 minutes create a virus to disable the shields, what have all these other scientists been doing for all these years that they don't know what's going on? Or have they been doing more of a physical check of the systems? Or kind of what was their approach to begin with? So maybe it was coincidence that they needed the code from the motherships to get in, but there should be some sort of explanation, or they should have figured something out by this ship turning on and have more information now that they're able to at least disable the shields and control the ship to begin with. So that's really all there is for that. So going into the next movie, I'm going to kind of see how they explain away the tech or what they do with that. I mean, I know they're talking about 20 years later or something like that, and they've had time to prepare. So we'll see what they're able to learn over all these years, and what they do from that with all the additional technology from the crashed motherships from the last movie. So overall, I thought it was a decent enough movie. I enjoyed it again this time. It was fun. I liked the acting. It was done, or it flowed reasonably well. It was just one thing after another. They tied in the storylines. The vice president was just as annoying this time around as last time. I did remember that he did get fired, so I was kind of waiting for that to happen again. I was actually still sad at the loss of the president's wife in this movie. It was it was well done as far as what happened. It was a good show of human spirit that in a time of crisis, people don't care who you are, what you do, you come together kind of thing. So overall, a good movie. I would recommend watching it again. I would probably put it in that 75% to 85% range. Seeing as how maybe the whole alien ship thing was my holdback point, but since they kind of went at the angle of, since the mothership showed up, everything turned on and Jeff Goldblum was able to crack the code, I'm not going to fault it too much, but it kind of did bug me about the whole going to space without the exoskeleton. So with that being said, I'll jump right into this week's Star Wars profile, and in this case I wanted to cover the Kyber crystal. So this is actually the thing that gives a lightsaber its familiar look and color. It's a specifically force-attuned crystal used in the construction of lightsabers, and is the only crystal known to be strong enough to handle the violent explosions of a lightsaber's power grid. So most other crystals would not be able to handle it, but with a Kyber crystal, it can properly reflect it and maintain its own structure. So in general, the Kyber crystal is used as a means of constructing lightsabers, but Jedi younglings are taken to planets like Ilum or Lothal to use the Force to select their own crystals. So they go into the temples on these planets, and whatever crystal is drawn to them and they're drawn to it, it becomes a crystal that they'll use in their lightsabers. So it is directly tied to each individual Jedi and Force user. The crystals start off as transparent crystals and adjust their color once they're chosen by a Force user. So the color is chosen based on their abilities and their tuning to the force of green, blue, in the case of Mace Windu, purple, and things like that. So it all depends on the kind of force user you are. A bit of fun fact that we saw in the Clone Wars TV show was that a large kyber crystal was actually found on the planet Utapau by the Separatists, and they were planning to use it on their super weapon, but the Republic found out about it and ended up destroying it, so they had to go into or find other methods to power the super weapon, in this case, the Death Star. So, overall, they are... aside from the red crystal used by the Sith, the crystals are used for lightsaber construction and are very key to Jedi's use of the weapon. So that is all for that. So after the short break, I'll jump into this week's You Can Relax. So let's say you love Life of an Accounting Droid and you want to help support the show, but you're not up for recurring payment, or maybe it's not in your budget for the month for recurring payment, you can still help the show and the network grow and help contribute to the shows that you love to hear and all of that good stuff. First off, you can visit or check out some of the great deals we have going on by visiting geek-io.net/support. You can check out some of our sponsors like T-Fury, Tweaked Audio, ProXPN. If you shop on Amazon, we have an affiliates link, so definitely check those all out. If you see something you like and you want to help us out, you can click on those links and you'll get some very great deals and promotions and help us out at the same time. Let's say you want to contribute to the Life of an Accounting Droid directly, but you don't really feel up for signing up for Patreon, or as I mentioned, you can't really do a recurring payment. You can also contribute via PayPal by visiting paypal.me/patelN01. When you make the contribution, let's say you wanted to go to a particular segment, like you want me to review a specific app or watch a particular TV episode or movie or anything like that, by contributing this way, your money can go straight to that particular feature, that particular part of the show. Or if you just love the show or the episode, then you can help contribute that way as well with whatever you feel comfortable with giving. Let's say you also prefer to read, or you know someone who would enjoy the content of the show but prefers to read instead, or they're always on the go and want to have that same thing on their Kindle, for example, or wherever you get the Kindle app, be sure to check out Journal of an Accounting Droid, which is basically all the same content you get on the show, but in the Kindle bookstore via an ebook format. You can check out all the latest releases by visiting author.patelN01.com. There's also a link to my Amazon author profile, so if you want to get notified as soon as a new journal is published, then there's also an email subscription link available, so you can easily buy it yourself or share it with anyone you might think is interested or anything like that. So be sure to check out all the great links at geek-io.net/support for all of our great sponsors, paypal.me/patelN01 for one-time contributions, and author.patelN01 for the Journal of an Accounting Droid ebooks. But that is all for that, so back to the show. So for this week's You Can Relax segment, I wanted to talk about the benefits of putting ginger in my coffee. So for a while I've been putting cinnamon in my coffee. It helps me feel a little bit more full. It was basically helping me I read a while back that it was good for joints, it's good for preventing illness and things like that. So I didn't mind the taste, so I kept doing it. But recently I thought of what else can I add to my coffee to make it taste better and make it more of a, I'll say healthy in quotes, of a drink. So I started putting ginger in my coffee. So in addition to getting additional illness prevention with the benefits of cinnamon, putting ginger in my coffee helps also prevent the loss of appetite and general physical pain relief. While I don't generally suffer from physical pain relief, I like the idea that coffee would help me stave off being sick and also getting that hungry feeling when I do drink coffee. So I started doing it, and It actually, I want to say, for me so far, has been pretty good at making me feel full and not necessarily getting that whole jittery feel or the extra jittery feeling I get when drinking coffee. So not only does it wake me up, but I don't have jitters. I don't feel as hungry for a little bit longer of a time. And overall, it feels good. It's not... I mean, that's really about it. I mean, black coffee is good, but I mean, is it just provide adding extra benefit to that coffee? For me, I use ground coffee, and then I use ground cinnamon and ground ginger. I brew it all together in a pot, and then I drain it out and drink it that way. So I imagine that the same thing can be done in a coffee machine. For me, what I found to be a good blend, though, is in an 8-ounce cup of coffee, I'll put about half a teaspoon of cinnamon and half a teaspoon of ginger. In anything more, so 10 to 20 ounces, I'll put 2 to 3 tablespoons of coffee and then 1 teaspoon of cinnamon and 1 teaspoon of ginger. So it kind of evens itself out, but I'll adjust it as I need. So if I want a little bit lighter coffee, I'll put less there. If I want a little bit stronger of the cinnamon and ginger flavor, then I'll add that. But it's good to be able to wake myself up with a nice cup of coffee in the morning and not get that whole jittery feeling and that whole effect. And then, of course, the one thing I definitely make sure I try to do after is drink a glass of water, so it starts processing or it just the offset is there as well, so it doesn't feel as heavy later on and I continue to stay hydrated. So I have no offset for that, but I want to make sure I'm also as hydrated as possible. I'm walking around a lot, working and all of that, so drinking water is that good way to stay hydrated as well. So in the blog post, or in the link for the blog post on that, I'll have the full recipe and more information about the benefits of cinnamon and ginger, so you guys can read more about that as well. But that is all for this particular episode. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or anything like that, you can always email me at headphonesneil@yahoo.com. You can find me on Twitter at patelN01. You can get links, prior episodes, and all of that good stuff, links of subscription links and all of that at patelN01.com. And of course, your 5-star rating on iTunes and the thumbs up in Google Play Music is definitely helpful to get the show recognized and promoted in those respective directories. And of course, you can find this show or any show on the Geek IO Network at geek-io.net. But that's all for this particular episode. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.